Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. All together, please. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Ganandana Salakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stavidam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yukta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagradatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dhina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radhakanta Namostute Tapcha Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Prishavana Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpat Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Paditanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare So, reading from Srimad Bhutu Upanishad, as it is, translation and commentary, His Divine Grace Sri Lesa Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada. Chapter 2, text number 11. Correct? Yes? Chapter entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized. Please repeat. Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Asochan.
Asochan.
Anuvasochas.
Anavasochas
Tvam Prajna Vadangs Cha Bhashyase Gatasun Agathamsunscha Nanusochanti Panditaha Shri Bhagavan Vacha Asochan Anvasochastvam Pragya Vagdangs Chabhashise Gathasun Agathasumscha Nanu Sochanti Panditaha Shri Bhagavan Vacha Asochan Anva Sochastvam Pragya Vadam Shabashase Gathasun Agathasunscha Nanyus Soschanti Panditaha Shri Bhagavan Vacha Asochan Anvasochastvam Pragya Bhadamscha Bhashyase Gathasun Agathasumscha Nanusochanti Panditaha Okay.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha
Asochan Anvasochastvam
Asochan Anvasochastvam
Prajnavadamscha Bhashase
Prajnavadamscha Bhashase
Katasun Agatasumscha
Katasun Agatasumscha
Nanusochanti Pandita
Nanusochanti Pandita
Vaishnavi Anavacha
Asachan
Machancha
Pragnavaram Savachas
Vashise Katasun Agatasamscha Nanu Sauchanti Panditaha Asochan Chananavasastvam Pragyavadam Chabashise Gitatasun Agatosamscha Nanu Sochanti Panditaha. Okay, please repeat. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Asochan, not worthy of lamentation. Anvasochaha, you are lamenting. Tvam, you. Pragya Vadangs, learned talks. Cha, also. Bhasase, speaking. Gita, lost. Asun, life. Agata, not past. Asun, life. Cha, also. Na, never. Anusochanti, lament. Panditaha, the learned. Translation Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
while speaking learned words,
you are mourning for that
which is not worthy of grief. There's a mistake there in Jayadvaita's. Anyway, those who are wise lament
neither for the living
nor for the dead.
Purport
Srila Prabhupada. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, you are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what the body and the soul and what is the soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology. But he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the Supreme is even more important than religious formularies.
Formulas.
Shouldn't it be? Formularies. I have to look that one up in the dictionary. Anyway, religious formulas. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body.
Mukham karochi vachalam pangam laite girim yat kripa tamaham vande shri gurun dinatharinam.
Sri Bhagavan vacha asochan anvasochastvam pragya vhadangs chabashyase Katasun agatam sungscha nanusos chanti panditaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for that which is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Yeah, so this is a very dramatic scene, is it not? Yes, of course, Bhagavad Gita has so much philosophy, so much good instruction, but it is set in a very dramatic position. You can imagine two vast armies in the millions. And Prabhupada, Dhananjaya, from England, you know Dhananjaya, he once was talking with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada explained to him they came from all over the world. The ignorant material historians and scientists, they think we were all in caves a few hundred years ago or a few thousand years ago. But actually there's a great civilization all over the world. You can look up documentaries. And all over the world there are these ancient buildings, not just pyramids. But even in North America, they have earthworks and they carbon date them. In South America, even in China, they found vast pyramids bigger than the ones in Egypt. And they found pyramids in Bosnia. And, you know, there's these ancient cultures. And, of course, in this modern day, we can't reproduce anything like they've created. And they're full of mysteries that we can't decipher. So there are many lost civilizations, perhaps from even previous yugas. For example, on the Sphinx in Egypt, I saw a documentary, and it has water damage. You know, if you see the pictures, it has grooves in it. And so they showed the picture to a geologist, and he said, this is water damage. They had cut out the head. Said, oh, this is obviously water damage. But in Egypt, it hasn't rained there for like 5,000 years. And there's all these great... So anyway, the picture that's given of history and the world and philosophy and everything that we've been brought up with in this civilization is not accurate. And anyone that actually investigates will find that there was... great civilizations here and there all over the world, stretching back and contradicting the evolutionary theory and so on, that we were 35,000 years ago. Of course, it changes every month. Every magazine presentation has a different date of when we were living in caves and bashing people on the head when we wanted to get married. So, of course, this evolutionary theory is just a way of denying God, a supreme creator. Make up any theory, voidism, monism, this and that. But don't tell me that it was created by a supreme lord, a supreme person. Because supreme means he has a certain demand upon me, certain requirements. But if I am the supreme aspect of evolution after millions of years, then who have I got to answer to? The world is mine, and I can manipulate, exploit it in any way I want. So that's the underlying motivation, and to present that and to deny a supreme creator, that is the motivation. And so the atheistic class, they've captured the educational system practically throughout the world. In the majority case. But still the people are not satisfied. Just like in Russia, I went twice to Russia under communism, 77 and also 85, and the people were so miserable. And they tried to brainwash the people by behavioral psychology, Pavlov, dogs, just train them so they could not believe in God. But the only thing that they ended up in believing was whiskey and being depressed. Because if there is nothing beyond this material life, what is there to look forward to? So, of course, That is not the picture that one gets from the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedas. Well, these Puranas, histories, they have great information of previous civilizations. But they do not stress just the facts and figures of history. They use those things to educate us what we should do now. Because this is the real part. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, forget the past that sleeps and ne'er the future dream at all, but act in times that are with thee, and progress ye shall call. Right? So if we're to act properly at this time and make progress, then we should be attentive to the moment. But we have to have knowledge. So here in the Bhagavad Gita is a summation of all the knowledge that we need. To transcend the modes of material nature, to awaken an understanding of the spiritual platform, is all here in seed form. And then of course that is expanded in the Srimad Bhagavatam elaborately. And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, these give wonderful information of the state of the spiritual world. So if a devotee becomes learned in all the ABC, as Prabhupada said, of Sambandha Gyan Siddhanta through the Bhagavad Gita, and then he studies Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, with the help of Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, and then he reads other literatures recommended by Prabhupada, Jivadharma, Shikshamrita, Upanishads, then he will get a vision of the spiritual world. And he won't be like Arjuna here. As Krishna is saying here, you're lamenting for what is not worthy of grief, is it? So let's look exactly what Prabhupada... Mourning for that which is not worthy of grief. Huh? So it might be, or you may grieve about something, but for the Vaishnava that means just like the six Goswamis, and when Jiva and Sanatan left, the other Goswamis, they were heartbroken, and they were saying, Radha Kund looks like because I don't have sadhu sangha. Huh? So yes, there are things that are worthy of grief, but that is spiritual realization, that is separation from those doorways to the spiritual world. Mahatmanas, what is that? Mahatmanas, Mahatdwaram Ahor Vimuktes. That the path to liberation is the doorway, is seva. Mahatsevam Dwaram Ahor Vimuktes. That if you serve the great acharyas, and that means you take their teachings and you try to promulgate them, then that is the door of liberation. So that is the duty of the devotee to learn to whatever extent they have the ability, and there is no boundary on that ability by grace of Krishna. We should understand that. Krishna is all-powerful. So he can empower anybody at any age, any situation, to distribute this message, because that is his desire, but he gives it to his devotees to do. He is the Supreme Lord, so he's got to be a little neutral, right? He can't interfere with your free will. But he gives free will to all living entities, he gives free will to his devotees, and he tells them, use your free will to interfere with the free will of others. That is your free will. I can't do that because I'm the Supreme Lord. But you have free will to annoy people by chanting on the street, giving them Maha Prasad, telling them to chant Hare Krishna, and telling them that this material world is not worthy of grief. Huh? Arjuna, what was he? What was his points? You're mourning. So I thought it's a good idea just to get the full picture of what Arjuna said. I think it starts on verse 4, yes. This is verse 4, that's right. Arjuna said, so we'll read the whole thing up to the present point so that we get the whole dramatic picture and we get Arjuna's arguments, which Krishna in this verse is dismissing. Not worthy of group. You're not learned, you're presenting big words and it sounds very good and very moralistic, but it's based on bodily consciousness, ignorance. That's what Krishna is going to tell. So Arjuna said, how can I counterattract? Now remember, we're in the middle of the battlefield. Millions of people are assembled, all ready to fight. Bhagavad Gita wasn't spoken, you know, in a nice, comfortable, comfy chair with lassi. Let's discuss spiritual life, Arjuna. No, it's on the battlefield. And this is a real battlefield. And this is a real situation, right? So you have to get that picture. Yes, the philosophy, we can get into the philosophy of the individual verses, but we have to set the backdrop, the picture of what's going on. So in this particular section, this is what Arjuna's arguments are. To stop fighting. O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu. So you're saying you're a killer, Krishna. It's a very interesting way to start. He wants to stop fighting, but he's telling that Krishna is the killer. How can I counteract with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? Maybe Arjuna is hinting that you should do the killing and I'll go and leave the battlefield. You're the killer of Madhu, you're the killer of enemies. So you do it and let me go to the hillside. No, Arjuna. Right, who are worthy of my worship. And that's true. Drona and Bhishma, they were great elders and great personalities. It would be better to live in this world by begging. Very dramatic. Oh, it's better. I become a beggar. Than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. He's not holding back, is he? Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Now, I'm confused, you know, about my duty and lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So on one hand he's saying, I don't want to fight. And then he's saying, you're instructing me. This is his confusion. You can see how even in this verse he's like not fixed. I want to surrender to Krishna. I'm confused. But I don't want to fight. So I've already made my decision. So this is a very... I can find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. Swargaloka. This sovereignty over this, particularly in Kali Yuga, if you're a king, it's not much fun. But up there in Swargaloka, Indra and the other great demigods, they have a wonderful time. There's no taxation, no cancer problem. There's no fight about left-wing or right-wing governments. Everyone is just in the Nandanandan gardens thinking, this is wonderful. However, the clock is ticking. There's always a worm in the apple, even if you go to Swargaloka. Sanjaya said, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. Right? So, here's his confusion. I'll not fight, but you instruct me. So, what's going on here? Please make me a devotee, but I don't want to chant Hare Krishna. O descendant of that Bharat, at that time Krishna, smiling in the midst of both armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. Now, that you see, that's very interesting what is here. Smiling, you see. Krishna's smiling. So Krishna's smile is very enchanting. In fact, even in this material world, a plain face becomes beautiful by smiling, right? Everyone knows that, though they may not practice it. In the midst of both armies spoke the following words. So Arjuna was grief-stricken by this confusion. So he's hinting, I have some understanding and I should follow you, Krishna, but really my feeling is not to fight. So this Krishna will pursue this now, and he'll explain that you're not the material body. What are you lamenting for? You're lamenting for the destruction of the body. He's saying, I don't want to kill. This is his main idea. But the thing is, Krishna's first argument is, and it will be in the next verse, let's look at number 12. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Right? So Arjuna's main argument is, I don't want to do the killing. These are my superiors. Yes, they're a little avaricious and they're not acting correctly, but that is also a good point. If a superior becomes angry or loses his cool, then the inferior should just think, well, Maharaj is a little upset, never mind, let him cool down and then everything will be all right. You shouldn't add fat to the fire, as they say. You know, it takes two to tango. So if somebody's angry with you, the best thing is, okay, especially superior. And we shouldn't think, oh, he's a superior, but he's angry. That means he's a nonsense. No, everyone is affected by the mode, so if somebody is a little upset, we should just think, never mind. It's just the modes and let it go badne. It doesn't matter. All right, let it go. And then at a later time, sort the problem out when things are cool. So this is Arjuna's point. That their superiors, let them have the kingdom. I don't really understand which is better. Let them have the kingdom anyway, because then everyone will be alive and we can sort it out then. Right? But Krishna doesn't take that point of view. He has intention, and that is that Yudhisthira is qualified to be on the throne. He's rightfully there, and it'll be for the good of the people if he is put on the throne. He's son of Dharmaraj, expansion from Dharmaraj. So, here, the first point is to counter that first point, that main point of Arjuna, that I'm going to kill and I don't want to kill. Krishna says, for the soul, I think it's the first, what's that next verse? excuse me. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So death is not death in the classic or Mayic sense of the term, but death is a change of body. And if the body is old and decrepit and broken by disease or whatever, then that is an advantage to pass away, actually. Particularly if you have used your time properly and you've developed, even in the material sense, some good karma. Because when somebody's on the bed dying and passing away, it looks very uncomfortable, and surely it is. So then if they can get a fresh material body in a good situation, they've been and done some devotional service, they've done some piety, then that's an advantage. And we should hope for a better situation. Of course, ultimately, that is a material thing. If somebody applies himself to Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, then in one life he can go back to Godhead. All Acharyas have said this. So don't... sometimes you go to astrologer this, astrologer that. In Kali Yuga, where is the actual astrologer? We don't know. And they will say, well, it comes to this and this and that, and you may receive it, so your next line. No, we listen to the Acharyas. And they say, you make your determination, and you can go back to Godhead in this life. Just apply yourself as best you can, and be sincere. There's a story, famous story in the Vedas, about a road and two houses on either side of the road. On one side of the road was the Brahmin, and he was doing all the mudras and mantras and everything, and chanting and studying the Vedas. But he hadn't developed the mood of bhakti, he hadn't been touched, hadn't been awakened. So he was a little bit proud of his piety and his mode. On the other side of the street, there was a courtesan, a lazy, a woman of easy virtue, a prostitute. But she was a devotee in her heart. And she was always lamenting, "Oh Krishna, somehow because of my previous situation, I've fallen in this condition. But you are my Supreme Lord. You please, I nanda tanuja kinkaram patitamam bishop. You pick me up, make me like an atom of dust. Nayanam gladasru. I'm feeling separation, she was feeling. So once I told this story to a person, and I said, which one went back to Godhead? And that person said, the Brahmin. I said, wait a minute. No, but you're all devotees, right? So you understand, right? The lady of easy virtue, the courtesan, went back to Godhead. Why? Not because of Vairi and Root, but because of Bhava. She had Bhava. So in Jiva Dharma, that's easily put there, that if you leave this body and you've attained not even Prem, but just Bhava Bhakti, that means liberated Sava Upadi Vinaya Muktam, and you have some real attachment to Krishna, then you will go to the Bhomalila, you'll go to where Krishna's pastimes are manifest in one of the material universes. There you, in the association of the Nitya Siddhas, you'll get your final training and your bhava will develop to prema. If you remember in the Rasleela section of Bhagavatam, some of the gopis, they were held back by their husbands and fathers. They heard the flute song of Krishna. So that flute song is represented in the material world, they say, or not material, by the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. When we hear that sound, we run to join Krishna. So some were held back. This is in the Bhomalila, Gokul. And it's explained there in the Bhagavatam and the purports, Acharyas, they explained that in that anxiety of separation, and that's taught by Mahaprabhu, Vipralamba Seva Bhav, they cast off their material body and went in their swaroop to join Krishna in the Rasleela. And they threw their material body, left it. And it explains there the final remnants of their material karma was burnt up in the anxiety of separation. So that is bhava, that you can't, just like in this material world, people fall in love and you are everything to me, you know, right, that kind of mood. No, you're nothing to me. Oh my God, how can I live? So, that is misplaced attachment. And of course, if we misplace that mundane, which is far less substantive than spiritual emotion, of course, but if we apply that to material objects, then we will always be dissatisfied and in anxiety. So the solution is to become anxious for Krishna. And that is the teachings of Mahaprabhu, Vipralamba Seva Bhav, service in separation. We don't follow the idea that I am with Krishna and I'm dancing with Krishna and Krishna's pulling my cloth. Prabhupada actually says that in one purport. No, by imagination I have attained Krishna. No, yes, use your imagination, contemplate the Bhagavad Gita, contemplate the Leela of the Lord, but mam namaskuru, from a position of humility, paying your obeisances to these pastimes. Because as long as we are attached to this body and mind, we should understand that we're not really qualified to enter. You can't, as they say, break down the doors of heaven. You can't break down the doors of Vaikuntha and burst in. No, you have to wait for the doors to be opened. You have to apply, knock on the door, I'm anxious, I am anxious to attain my spiritual nature, but out of your mercy, I am under Tanija Kinkaram. I'm your servant, but I'm fallen down. You pick me up, Krishna. This is important. Any systemology that teaches people to meditate upon the pastimes of Krishna, that is okay. But we should take the advice of the acharyas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given perfect instructions through the Goswamis how to do this meditation, in what mood. So, here, the time of death, that will occur to us all. It's very sobering. There's one god brother, now an old friend of mine, he's 80 years old, he's in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, right? And he's not looking very well. So that time will come to all of us, but we should be fearless, huh? Knowing that I'm not the material body. Now I have to go through this process of leaving the body, but just like you have to wait in the bus queue in Delhi to catch the bus to Vrindavan, you just have to suffer it, everyone pushing and shoving. So you just have to tolerate, and that tolerance can be pursued if we keep our mind upon the goal. So actually it's interesting. So what is death? If we never actually die, the soul never dies. That question is answered in the third canto by Kapildev to his mother. It's a very interesting definition of death. So we should adopt that understanding. And it says there that death is when the soul, transmigrating soul, gives up identification with the previous body. Huh? Somebody's leaving the body. So death is when he no longer identifies. Therefore, in many religious systems, they have, like Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Lama will come and they'll chant and they'll say, "Oh soul, now you have left the body. Don't go to this, go to that. Leave the body, it's not yours. Don't remain attached." So it's also, you can also understand from that understanding that, like sometimes people, they become ghosts. And one form of that is they remain very attached to the body. They think, oh, and so they hang around in a ghostly form. So the devotees and the lamas and whatever, no, don't be attached to this body, go. And therefore in the Vedic system they don't generally bury the body, because the soul may hang around the graveyard, go to the grave and watch everyone say, "He was a good man, he was a good husband, he was a good father, yes, he had a good business, he ran a very good slaughterhouse, he fed the world." So the ghost hangs around, "Yes, that's right, I did. I fed a lot of people. Poisonous, factory-made meat. No, never mind. I'm a great man. Maybe they'll come back tomorrow and praise me, and then he'll hang around the cemetery." Huh? So that he's not dead in terms of that teaching. He's still identifying with this body. So the Vedic system is, okay, take it to the scrapyard on the bank of the, in Benares, and burn it. Right? And then where's the soul going to hang around? It's going to hang around the burning ghat? Maybe for half an hour or so, anyway. So anyway, that is the process of death. To lose identification with the body. And then similarly, it says that birth, Kapildev says, that birth is when the soul starts to identify with the new body. Huh? So you know the baby usually starts moving around the 7th month or something. So he's starting to identify with that body, starting to energize the body. Prana is the energy of the soul that is generated by the soul in contact with the modes and material energy under the supervision of supersoul. So as soon as the soul starts to identify, oh, this is my body, under the direction of the super soul, that is birth. Of course, birth is also there when one, you know, pops out of the womb. And that's not much fun either. The baby doesn't usually come out telling jokes and smiling. We're introduced to this world in a state of lamentation, and when we leave this world, it's a very uncomfortable situation. And what we do in between, we try to eke out some happiness. But actually, what we should eke out is spiritual realization. We don't want economic development for human society. We want spiritual development. Economic development will follow. From Dharma comes Artha. This is Pravritti Marg. That you act piously, then you'll naturally have a good situation. Then karma, you can enjoy your senses. And then when you're frustrated and you've done things under a regulated attitude, then you'll become interested. Oh, I'm not really satisfied. Maybe I'll become interested in moksha. Of course, Ravana and the demons, they were teaching the Vedas, but they were only teaching Dharma, Artha and karma. They didn't go to moksha. Because the materialist wants to stay in the material world and enjoy this. So this was the mood of Arjuna. It's going to mess up the whole world. You know, I'm going to kill all these elders, I'm going to kill this, and do this, and I'm going to be in the middle of it all. It's going to make a terrible mess. This was his vision. But Krishna is telling you, this is the slaughterhouse. The slaughterhouse material, what is a slaughterhouse? All the poor animals are gathered. They're all lined up, and they're all going to die. So this material world is a slaughterhouse in those terms. We're all going to lose this material body. So that should be partly an inspiration to take to spiritual understanding, at least spiritual inquiry. Of course, you're all devotees, you've made that decision, and you're coming to Krishna, and you're feeling some realization, and I'm on the right path. So this wasn't the mood of Arjuna, because upadi, he was identifying with the material body, sarva upadi vinir muktam. So this is the first point of spiritual life. First, Prabhupada, actually there's a story of Donovan. He was a pop singer in England, he was folk around the time of Bob Dylan or something. He came to see Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was explaining, he was kind of famous in England, and Prabhupada was explaining to him, you know, this material world, this and that. But then a devotee burst in, and he said, Donovan, can't you just understand? You turn Hare Krishna, follow regulative principles, and you'll get eternal life in the transcendental world. Prabhupada said, be quiet. First of all, he's instructing in the presence of his own spiritual master, his own superior. It's very foolish thing to do, forgivable out of his naivety, but then Prabhupada becomes, he doesn't even understand why he should take to spiritual life, and you're giving him the instruction. So the first point is that you go to the doctor when you realize that you have a problem. You don't go to the doctor because you're feeling good. You go to the doctor. So the first point is, and that is one of the benefits, if you like to put it that way, of Kali Yuga, because it's all such a mess, human society. There's so much a mess. The rivers are polluted, the air is polluted, the food is GMO and this and that, and there's so much war and niggling and argument and ignorance everywhere for useless thing. This is actually makes people think. Just like in Russia, when the devotees took to Krishna consciousness, they had full enthusiasm because communism was such a grey sheet over the whole country. There's no taste there. So Kali Yuga is like that. There's very little enjoyment. Even if you're a king or a leader or a rich man in Kali Yuga, what is it, 80, 50, 60, 70, 80 years? And then what kind of life can you have? The government's trying to rip you off. And everything, his tax man is following round like a big ghost. There's no fun in Kali Yuga. But people are very determined, so they keep banging their head against a brick wall. So the first thing is to understand that there's no happiness in the material world, and that's very obvious. Huh? There's a little ephemeral titillation of the senses, passing, ephemeral, not permanent. And then there's a feeling of lack and vacancy afterward. And that is not enjoyment for the soul. That is just distraction from suffering, another form of suffering. So when the soul has this understanding, then he gives up attachment and he starts to inquire, is there something beyond this material life? Is there another status of existence? So then he can be instructed. And this is the first point. You're not the material body. That's why you're not satisfied in the material world. Even in Satyalok you won't be satisfied, because material things cannot satisfy the spiritual soul. The soul is a different energy from matter, and therefore it requires spiritual happiness, spiritual enjoyment. And that is in the transcendental abode. But the mood of spiritual enjoyment is not selfish like this material world, but it is unselfish. It is seva bhava. Let me serve Krishna and Krishna's devotees for their satisfaction, and that is my happiness. But the devotee is ready to curse happiness. There's that story in the Nectar of Devotion. I think it was Diruka. He was fanning Krishna. I think he's the chariot driver of Krishna, Daruka, something like that. And he was feeling such ecstasy serving his beloved Lord that his hand started to shake. He was starting to, and he's cursing this happiness. Go away! He's interfering with my service. So this is the purity of the transcendental platform, that the devotee does not interested even in happiness. That is a side effect. He's interested in serving his beloved Lord and the beloved devotees. So that is the real home of the living entity. That is our real destination. Just like the Brijbasis, after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, they went to Krishna after that Leela, and they inquired, Krishna, we were thinking you were a great personality, maybe a deva on this earth, but now we're thinking that maybe you're the Supreme Lord. You're on your left little finger. Of course, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys, they were also helping, keeping up Govardhan Hill. Krishna couldn't have done it without you, we believe. But we're thinking that, are you the Supreme Lord? And after your Leela, where will you go? You'll go. Where are we going to go? You're going to leave us, because in the material world death is there, or change of body, or whatever. So, and then Krishna showed the spiritual world to the Brajajana Ranjana. And he said, this is your destination. This is where you'll go. You're coming to the spiritual world. Prabhupada says that, and that was the first sight of the spiritual world. So the Brijbasis had that vision. So you see, if you're going to a place, you have to have a vision of it in your mind, right? Say, Prabhu, he just came from England. So he's thinking, I'm going to Vrindavan. Now all the things I've got to do, I've got to get the visa, I've got to get the stamp, I've got to pay for the ticket, I've got to be on time, I've got to get the taxi, I've got to pack my bags, and I've got to take anti-malaria pills. Oh no, it's winter. So you're planning because you have that destination in mind. You have that destination. And your mind's fixed on that destination. So this is very instructive, is it not? The Brijbasis, oh, that's where we're going. We're going to be with Krishna eternally. So we should gain that vision from the Gita, from the Bhagavatam, from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, from the Shastra. That is prayojan tattva, the goal. But prayojan also means the necessity. You see, we are spirit souls, so it's necessary for us to go to the spiritual world, or the spiritual consciousness, ultimately, because spiritual world is ultimately a destination of consciousness, of bhava, of prema. It doesn't really matter if you're in Gokul or Golok. In the Jiva Dharma, there's a wonderful chapter, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he says, seeing Golok in Gokul, and Gokul in Golok. So Gokul means this earthly manifestation, and then Golok means that transcendental abode. There's no conjoint between the Chit Shakti and the material energy. So Gokul, we are directed to meditate on the Leela of Krishna in Gokul. And that will purify us and give us the vision of Golok. And then as we have that vision, we should understand with confidence, Guru Rupa Goswami says, right? Utsahan, you know, enthusiasm, patience, and confident. Devotees should feel confident. Yes, mam namaskaru, I'm very humble. I'm not qualified, I'm trying to attain that, but I will attain that. Right? Just like if Prabhu thinks, oh, I want to go to Vrindavan and he's in London, and he thinks, oh, I won't be able to get there. Then you'll give up. Right? Well, it won't help you. Maybe some friend will push you along. But if you think, oh, I will go to Vrindavan, I will make it, then you will be enthusiastic and you'll be patient, confident. So it's very important that, because that is what we are made for. We are made for the transcendental platform, but somehow or other we are trying to serve ourselves and enjoy this material energy. But in this transcendental world we serve Krishna, and enjoyment is a side effect. You're not, you know, it's just like heat in the hot season. You're not looking for it, it's there. Here Krishna is starting this point. You're lamenting for this material world, but it's always going to be. There's never going to make utopia. They're never going to make a perfect society in this material world. There's always going to be inebrities. Even in ISKCON, of course, we should understand. Some people are going to have problems. Some people are going to become angry. Some people are going to fall into Maya. We shouldn't think. We shouldn't use the perfection of spiritual consciousness as a club to beat one another. Oh, you got angry yesterday, you're a nonsense. Everyone gets on. You shouldn't get angry, it says in the Bhagavad Gita. Well, I got angry because you kicked me in the face. No, there's always going to be inebrieties. We're in the material world, so we have to not look for the fault. But rather we should say, oh, here's a soul, here's a spirit soul, he's on the way back to Godhead. And he's a great soul. Krishna says what? He's a manushyanam sahasreshu. That they're great soul, everyone. And of course there's some inebrities, because we've got this material body, material mind. But everyone is sheltered under Krishna. So everyone is wonderful in that regard. And so that mentality is important. And then we can live as a happy family and all go back to Godhead. Huh? And not look for perfection. Arjuna is saying, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Krishna is saying, look, it's always going to be mess down here in the material world. You're in Durga Dham. It's a place of birth, death, old age and disease. Huh? The Maya Shakti is here. Everyone is mixed up about what happened in the past, or whether we lived in caves, or what happened, or we were seeded from some UFO a million years ago. Nobody knows what's really going on. Come out of the Maya Shakti and come to the Chit Shakti. Come to the realization of this material world. I was listening to one lecture, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, in the spiritual world, we have spiritual body, and there's no need of eating. People eat, but out of lila. There's no need of sleeping, huh? But they're not impelled by sleep. Here you go, oh, it's 9 o'clock. it's 5 o'clock in the morning, I've got to go to the bathroom. We're impelled all the time by eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But in the spiritual world, there's no impelling by those things. So I was thinking that, wow, that's pretty wonderful, isn't it? People take rest, but it's a pleasure. It's just a thing. People eat, it's a pleasure, so on and so forth. All the activities of the spiritual world, They're not bearing upon the spirit soul like they do in the material world, but there's just a liberated platform, liberated, and just the soul finds expression in bhava and prem. Huh? And there's endless variety of pastimes and interchange, Govinda Leelamrita, Krishna Bhavanamrita, Vidugdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, all these Leela Shastra, they just give us a little snippet of the unlimited ecstasy of the transcendental abode. So that should be our destination. That should be our meditation, our contemplation. We should have a vision of that. And we should understand this material world is always going to be an unhappy place. But the whole thing is, it's designed two things. From the point of view of the jiva, two things the material world. One, he can fulfill your desire to enjoy separately. You can even become Lord Brahma, Indra. You can go down to the subterranean heavenly planets and be a Rakshasa and all do everything. You can enjoy all that material things independent of the Supreme Lord. But then it's also designed by the mercy of Krishna that eventually you think, oh, I've been life after life and I'm not satisfied. So then you'll look, you become curious, right? Curious and the man of knowledge, they surrender to Krishna. And then the atati, the one who wants wealth, and then the one that's suffering. These are four people, they approach Krishna. So the material energy fulfills your desire for independent enjoyment, and you can do it without too much suffering if you follow pravritti marg, dharma, artha, karma, moksha. You can be a pious person and stay up in heaven. But also, that is not satisfactory. And the pleasure of svargaloka is nothing compared to... It's like winter compared to hot season in Vrindavan. Right? In the hot season, there's so much heat, there's too much of it. So in the spiritual world, there's too much ecstasy. This material world is like sitting in an ice tub. Even in Swargaloka, there's no ecstasy in this material world. There's just distraction from real enjoyment or real rasa, the transcendental abode. So this is what Krishna is going to teach Arjuna. Don't try to be happy in this world, Arjuna. Don't try to sort. Be a pious person, do your duty, but do it for me. And then ultimately surrender all this and just be my devotee. Come to Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Satadam Kirtayantomam. Come to Nivritti Marg. Decrease your involvement in this material world and Shravanadi Sudachitte. Perform those things that awaken your Krishna prema, your bhava. And I will take you back to Godhead. But you have to decide. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna. So don't lament for the execution of your duty. Rather, it's impious if you don't do your duty. And the first point is, there's no real death. So this is a wonderful thing, isn't it? This is a wonderful thing, right? When you're a child, the first time you hear that people can die, you start to, maybe a year or two later, think that I can die, that means. Right? Or maybe in a week or an hour or two. You think, oh, I can die. Oh my God. Me? Dead? But I've got a big mummy and a big daddy. How can I die? No, I'm afraid. So this is like the worm in the big worm in the big apple, isn't it? That everything is temporary. Dukkhalayam asashvatam. So if we meditate on that, and at the same time we compare it to the vision of the spiritual world given in the Gita and particularly developed in the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya, the Leela Shastras, then we can adopt as our goal the transcendental abode and become absorbed in confidence, because it's not dependent upon us. Ultimately, Krishna's Mukunda, all right? And it's there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, remember that? There's a section, if somebody just once says, Krishna, tomorrow, I am yours, then Krishna says, from that moment, I promise to, I take him as mine, and I will take him back to the spiritual world. Now I've got the excuse. Krishna is just looking for an excuse to take us to the spiritual world. Try to understand that Krishna is a person. He reciprocates. So if you say, Krishna, I belong to you, you take me back. Make me, purify me, make me your servant. I nanda tanuta kinkaram. Then Krishna, oh, I've got an excuse. He's told me to do that. So he'll give you sadhusanga, he'll give you bhajana kriya, he'll give you realization, he'll do everything. This is the why bhakti, compared to bhakti, every other process of self-realization is just like, you know, it's like steam compared to ice. It's useless. So bhakti is the only really potent process. The others are just preparatory. So here is Krishna. And this it's built on this point. You're not the body. This is your basic idea in that's conditioning you. I'm this material body. And if this material body is complimented, I feel happy. If it's insulted, I feel sad. No, this is all. And if I have to do this, I have to do... No. Your preoccupation should be the transcendental abode. And how do you develop that vision of the spiritual world? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Okay, thank you very much. Any question? Yes?